we look back on a controversial chapter in Aotearoa's history, the wrongful execution of Whakatohea Rangatira Mokomoko in 1866. He was one of five Māori executed for the murder of the missionary Carl Waukner at Opotiki in 1865. Jake Mokomoko is a direct descendant, and he's the director of photography on the new documentary series Stolen Lands, which traces the story of Chief Mokomoko, the aftermath of his death, and the struggle to clear his name. Stolen Lands is available now on RNZ. That's on the website, rnz.co.nz. Jake joins me now, along with writer and producer Claire Varley. Jake and Claire, tēnā kōrua. Thank you for your time.
Tēnā kōrua.
Tēnā kōrua. I hope this works out all right. We've got you both on phones, but I'm sure we'll get there. So let's start at the beginning. Why was it so important? Let's start with you, Jake. Why was it so important to tell this story now?
To tell the story now, I think it came out timely. I mean, with around the treaty claims and whakatohia, perfect timing. For us, it's been a story that needed to be told for many generations. And as you say, Julian, it is a big piece of New Zealand history that is unknown. And for us to be able to tell this story was amazing in itself. And the timing was everything. The timing just so happened to work out how it has. We didn't have much control over that. We just knew that we needed to tell the story and the story needed to be told. And it feels like it just came into, you know, perfect divination, actually.
But there's also a hefty weight of responsibility, Jake, as a direct descendant, to not only tell the story at the right time, but in the right way. So how do you manage that, given the history and given the mana of your tūpuna, of Mokomoko?
Well, it's something that you can't endeavour to do by yourself, Julian, because the story does carry a lot of weight, a lot of mana. And it's still, you know, to this day, the continuation of the treaty claims, it actually lives in both worlds, Te Ao Māori and Pākehā. So we needed a team that comprises of both of those worlds. Professionals from all over the country were involved. And as me being a direct descendant, I think it was poetic for me to be able to tell the story, not just because of my lineage, but also because I think we would not have done it justice if somebody had told the story or around story sovereignty. I mean, Māoridom, we've all been telling stories for generations before us. It's in our culture. It's part of who we are. So I think being me and him being my koro, it needed to be someone from our whānau. And I think just the mana in that in itself was sort of helped guide the way, in a sense, and then everybody that came on board done a fantastic job. Everybody, whether they were Pākehā or Māori, we all knew the significance, the mana that was behind it, and everybody treated as not as lightly, but as respectful as possible. It was a beautiful way that it all unfolded, Julian, and I think it was just meant to be.
Ka pai, I do want to get into format and episodic breakdown soon. But Claire, as producer, given that you're working with Jake, who's DOP, and as I say, a direct descendant, and as he's talked about his tūpuna, did you see the role that you had more as an able support or active guardianship and guidance to make sure that the story and the inclusion of whānau, but the wider story, so that it can be told in an informative and educational way to the rest of us, if I can put it that way, to the rest of Aotearoa, was done well?
Yes, that's a very big question. I was mainly just the vessel. The story basically told itself, in all honesty. Like, yes, there's a lot of research that's gone into that. When you're looking at the facts, but how it unfolded was very fluid. And of course, being a Māori kaupapa, we had, you know, tikanga and kawa at the fore. So everything we did that came first, there was lots of consulting with whānau members, just making sure everyone felt that, you know, we're doing it this way, is this right? So I was just kind of making sure that everyone felt, you know, safe in that process. Yeah.
And the decision to have Summer as the narrator in Te Reo, and by the way, beautiful.
I know.
I mean, I love it, right? And but you know that's what I'm like. I'm in Te Reo and all that kind of thing, as Jake knows well. But that decision to have a young wahine, beautiful reo, tell this story. How did that come about?
We felt out of all our nieces that she was probably the most experienced in her reo, and we wanted that, you know, of the highest quality, of course. But also, she has had her own personal journey with the story, and feels very much connected to him through that, through her learnings and stuff like that. So it just felt really natural for Summer to step up and play that role. Also, Jake's mum, Cindy Mokomoko, like, pretty much she is the go-to for any kind of decisions in the whole whānau. So if she says yes, then yes, it's yes, and that's pretty much how it happened.
I think we sometimes call that the auntie's rule, eh? The auntie's rule. Jake, there's lots of congratulations to make here, but I particularly want to talk about episode one because it's really important to set scenes, right? So in episode one, I know it's called The Chief, but the history of Mokomoko's lineage and the role that he has as chief, which is absolutely foundational in the rest of the telling of this story about approach and everything else that happens afterwards. How did you come to the formulation to make that format decision to tell that story, and what was that like?
I think for us, Julian, we approached this project from two perspectives. One was that obviously a documentary, you need to have the facts, and the facts, you know, being who is our main character. Our main character is our rangatira. The other perspective that we had is that we want to turn this into a movie. And we actually initially started writing a script around his lifetime for the telling of a movie. But we understand that within a movie, you need to fall in love with your lead character. So for episode one, The Chief, we wanted to paint the picture of the chief. And for all those people that don't know Te Ao Māori, they may not know, you know, rangatira through his status, through his lineage, and all of these things culminate into the person that will lead the iwi, or the person that he was. So for us to find as much information that sort of solidifies and pushes the point of the stature of the man, the nobility of the man through lineage, the choices, the leadership of a person in that role, who that person is through all of these things, that's how we sort of shaped the chief. And then as we move through the different characters of the events that happen through the life of Mokomoko, we turn to the crown, and then so on and so forth. We start moving down the chain chronologically. So that's how we sort of shaped episode one, to help you get a sense of who Arangatira is, who he was, and hopefully fall in love with that character, our man, Chief Mokomoko.
The other interesting thing, that history for a long time told the story as if Volkner was a hero and Mokomoko was the anti-hero. So the way in which you formulated this gives a greater perspective, as I say, that foundational basis, not only of Mokomoko, but his role as a protector of the rohe, of the takiwā, of Te Whakatohe. How and why did Mokomoko become the reason, why was Mokomoko the man that was wrongly accused of murdering Volkner?
I think, you know, you are right. Maybe Volkner was made out to be the hero in past, and through our lens, we see the opposite. I don't think either is wrong, depending on who you are and which lens you're looking through. But I kind of speculate as well, because as much as we know from the historians or the history books, you know, there is speculation as to why he was convicted and why he was hung. The evidence was, you know, not great. And So I speculate that it was a part of enacting the law around confiscation of lands. And the Rebels Act, I think, of 1863, it may be. I could have these facts wrong, but there is a law there that states once you are a rebel, then by law you can take your lands. And I believe, just speculation, but I believe that was the case.
Yeah, it was like he was framed, pretty much. Like, you're the last, well-known rangatira of this area, because there were battles prior to his surrender, which some of the other chiefs were killed. So he was, the last one standing, so to speak. And you could pretty much say that he was framed of killing Volkner just so that land confiscation could happen. I mean, I know that's a pretty,
But that leads to the militia bombardment by the ubiquitous George Grey, right? That that was the excuse that he had to go in and bombard Te Whakatohe.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It was actually the killing of Balloon, I think, as well.
How hard is it, and I'll ask you first, Claire, how hard is it to keep one's emotions at the door when you're trying to tell a story like this? And then I'll come and talk to the whānau, because Jake can talk on behalf of the whānau. But as someone who's telling a story, as I say, for the benefit not just of the illumination, but information and education, how hard is it to be able to tell the story without that emotional impact on you, knowing it's a part of our history?
Yes. Well, for me, I saw it as I have a mission and I'm going to do this justice, and we are sick of his name being dragged through the mud, so it was quite easy for me not to get emotional. Not that I haven't been emotional, because I have. I still cry when I watch, some of these episodes, especially parts of episode 3 when Summer covers Moko Moko's Waiata that he composed in prison. That always gets me, quite emotional. But I was just so determined to see it through, so I just focused on that and basically tried not to feed into any of the heavy emotions.
So Jake, as the DOP, Director of Photography, sorry folks for using internal language here, as Director of Photography, and thank you, Claire, for mentioning episode 3, because there are parts of episode 3 where I'm not a whānau member, but one's inability to be able to retain one's kind of emotional stability is really hard. So Jake, how did you do that?
Well, I'd just like to add that we did have a couple of director of photographies on there from different shoots. I shot some of it, but mainly I directed our documentary. But there was many times that we were all caught off guard, that we were shooting interviews or listening to some stories of whakapapa or whichever in these, beautiful locations, be it the Urupa or down at the Waiweka River. And we were all overwhelmed and overcome with emotions at times. But as, documentary makers, our job is to take the facts, to take the story, and put it out there for the world to see as best as possible. So we always had that common goal, that common vision, and we were always driving forward to that. But we were hit with waves of emotions, definitely. And now that we sit back and it's online and it's out there for us to watch, those waves of emotion do come back every time we watch certain pieces of our documentary, because we all resonate with different parts, whether it be our lineage or just the story or somebody else's, someone else's whanaunga involved here and there. I think we can all find that we should or most likely become emotional at some point watching this documentary series.
What's the response been so far, Jake and Claire? What have you heard from people, particularly whānau? Not just involved. There's some significant and important people who talk in the documentary, Karen and Te Kahotu and Matua Teriaki. But what's the response from other whānau members been?
Everything's been positive. Great so far.
Everyone's quite proud, which is, everyone's very proud of their rangatira, because he was a great man.
And even the wider, the wider whānau and iwi, people that don't even whakapapa back to whakatohia. I think everybody's proud of us telling a story as significant as this. And, you know, under the title or the brand Stolen Lands may be quite controversial, but once you get into it, we can all resonate with maybe some other whakapapa of ours that have similar stories. So everybody's proud that we've told this story, and a lot of people have actually been saying, well, there's some stories like this I'd love to be told in our whānau and what have you. So I think as Māoridom, we can all be proud and stand here with our heads held high. And that's kind of how it's been feeling as well online with comments and feedback that we get. Yeah, we were with Te Kahotu the other day, and he said, yeah, that he's heard a lot of great feedback as well from over his way in Hamilton.
I mean, there's a lot of responsibility that sits on the likes of Te Kahotu, Karen, Matua Tiriaki, who I saw actually was recognised by Te Whareo Anawa when we arangi with an honorary doctorate for his role and the retention of history and kōrero tuku iho and the like for Te Whakatohia. But there's a lot of responsibility that sits on them as well. So how do you ensure that not only that they get their time and their place to be able to say and talk about the histories, but you also look after them throughout the process? How do you do that?
Lots of karakia, for one. Yeah. And lots of hui as well, you know, like everyone's been, you know, in a safe space when we've had these kōrero. Yeah. And this has been ongoing as well. I mean, like, this claim's been going since the 90s, so there's, you know, they know a lot, and we just actually had... you know, Karen present her historical evidence the other day to the tribunal, and, you know, she stands up there and it's like, although it's heavy, very heavy and sad, like, she's, you know, this is her life and she relives this, you know, all the time. So, they're pros at it. They know what they're doing, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say since 1992, since the pardon, right? But actually, it's 1865.
Yeah. That's right.
You know, it's 1865, and the heft of that kind of responsibility to carry those traditions on is huge.
Mm. Yeah, it is huge. It's been going on for a long time. And like Claire says, there has been a lot of karakia. There has been a lot of wānanga, even if it's just kōrero on the phone. And if anyone out there listening to this know how hard it is to get hold of Te Kahotu, he actually was... quite active and, you know, making sure that we're going about it the right way. Oh. I think we were interviewing him at Waiwa, actually, and midway through his interview, he just stopped and he started giving a full-on karakia. It was a long one. And then straight back into the interview because, you know, the wairua of the whole piece, he just felt compelled to, you know, give it a bit of a karakia in that moment. And he only knows why. But the whole thing was very sacred.
Look, I just want to congratulate you both. And the other thing, that I just wanted to mention was the time. You know, it's five episodes, but the time you took just to tell the story and the kōrero and put things in context, not just historical context, but even the kōrero around Mokomoko and his whakapapa, Mātātua Waka, other iwi involved in around the takiwā of Te Whakatohia, as well, the time it takes to do that. So, ngā mihi nui kia kōrua. Thank you so much for giving us your time. I wish you all both the very best and the team the very best for the documentary Stolen Lands. It's in five episodes, as I said, and available now on the RNZ website. That's rnz.co.nz and other social media platforms as well. Jake and Claire, tēnā kōrua.
Thanks,
Julian. Kia ora maita. That was Jake Mokomoko and Claire Varley of Stolen Lands, the documentary, as I said, unavailable on the RNZ website now.